The Grim Reaper is upset with me as we welcome you in to the latest episode of Puck Culture. What deal?
Well, last week we both showed up in black. I thought it looked a little somber, a little
Well, polka dots
solemn,
are
little.
Not
now,
somber.
You, I give you credit. You dressed it up with the dots. It's still got a lot of black going on. Still got a lot of black. I did my part. I brighten things. I brighten things up over
right,
on
well,
over on this side of the podcast.
Okay, well,
on the west side of the podcast.
Yeah, so you can be good cop and I'll be bad cop for this show, and that's how we'll play this episode out.
So not a lot's changed.
Hey, I might resent you for that comment later.
I meant nothing personal
okay,
of it.
Thanks,
I meant nothing
thanks,
personal
Stu.
Of it.
Trade deadline day in the books. I'm still recovering. 32 deals, 55 players on
you
the
know.
Move. I mean, it's been a couple days now, but I still haven't really processed everything that happened and formulated necessarily strong opinions about it all.
Yeah.
But we're going to discuss all things trade deadline, all things sort of winners, losers, intriguing things. We're going to be
deadline
joined...
aftermath.
Yeah, exactly. And ESPN's John Buttigieg is going to join the show.
That'll be great.
As well, he's always
Bucci
full
likes
of
him
energy.
Some hockey. He likes him some hockey.
He is as legit as they come, to say the very least.
Yeah.
But before we dive into it, how are you? I mean, I know you were just here last week, but what's going on in the world of Stu Grimson? What are you watching right now? What's happening?
So great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Feeling great. Busy month. You know, I've been at the network, I think, just about every week this month.
Yeah.
You know that as well as anybody because I've been on NHL Now through all that. But it's been a really good month. Busy. Travel lots. What am I watching? Jen
Stu
and I...
is a ahead. Binge. Is a binger when it comes to TV
yeah,
series.
When I can,
big time.
When I can find the time. So the... fourth season of Narcos dropped last weekend, and I think we're almost through it already. It started out slow. It's been really good. Some great characters
on
there. It's a really
show
interesting story to follow. It's well worth it. Go
okay.
back to season one. Season one, season two, to me, they're hard to beat, but I'm still in there slugging away. It's good. Narcos is really solid.
See, I've been going through this weird phase where I've been watching a lot of stand-up comedy and just different lighthearted, nonsensical things. So that's like sort of the
Survivor
ride that
is the mainstay.
Right, oh,
Survivor,
love Survivor
is the mainstay.
Another
that's
episode
your,
tonight.
That's your ground. That's your center of gravity.
Yeah,
right now.
Like I really hope that people will listen and watch the new episode of Puck Culture this evening when it drops later today. But like also. So Survivor. Like I will be talking all things Survivor later, but for now, I just love Boston Rob, and I like Parvati. I don't know how to say her name.
Well, you're looking
but,
to the wrong
she's great.
Place for clarification.
So one-way convo right here. So we'll move on.
Yeah.
We'll move on. Let's talk trade deadline. And you know, you and I have discussed this a little bit on yesterday's show. But for you, like, which team really grabbed your attention the most? Which team did you really, really like what they did?
Yeah, I think Carolina for me, close second is Anaheim, and I'll tell you why. I've told you why. I'll tell our podcast listeners why. But Carolina for me, I thought really went out and made some impactful deals. Sammy Vatanen, I think is a guy when healthy can really help them on the blue line. And two, you know, maybe just backing up a step, remember a couple of top four, maybe their top two blue liners, Pesci and Hamilton are unavailable presently. Hamilton doesn't look like he's coming back at all this year. So you've got to go out, you've got to make some acquisitions if you plan to compete.
Tell that to Kyle Dubas.
I thought Donwell did a fantastic job of that. Vatanen will help you in the near term. Whether he ends up being a long-term piece, he's UFA this summer, don't know. But Brady Shea is a guy, and I liked the approach where Carolina was concerned. Waddell says, I'm not going to burn a first round pick unless I can get somebody back for that with term on him. And that's exactly what Brady Shea is. He's a really gifted defender. Rangers fans, I'm sure, are sad to see him go. But I think this guy can be a real nice addition, upgrade on the blue line for them. And they got him for another, I believe, 4 years. And then Anaheim, you know, for me, well, let me finish off. Trocheck, I thought, I think he's a guy that really, whether he's second line, third line, center for the Canes, he's a guy that makes them a lot stronger down the middle. Anaheim, to me, was just an intriguing little sideshow to watch. They're not terribly relevant where the playoff picture is concerned, but a group that really was a declared seller at the deadline because they're so far south of the line. I thought, didn't, you know, jettison a bunch of picks and draft currency, but instead, you know, moved out pieces and got pieces back in return that were a better fit for them and may end up being really impactful going forward. And hey, as we look back over last night's games, I mean, Danton Heinen made a really fabulous play on the game-winning goal for his new team, the Ducks. And Sonny Milano had a pair last night. I thought he looked great. This is a guy that, you know, playing in a different organization, Jack, we'll see. He could be good.
For me, it was the Oilers. I was just like, the Oilers really grabbed my attention on deadline day. The fact that Kenny Holland's out there wheeling and dealing and saying that he's making moves to sort of reward the players for their efforts this year.
I like that.
You know, fighting for top spot in that Pacific Division, which is still so very up for grabs for a handful of teams, not just for a couple of teams. So Andreas Athanasiou, I think, is an interesting addition. Ken Holland obviously knows him well from his time in Detroit. So I'm curious to see how this all plays out for the Edmonton Oilers. And I'm just happy for Oilers fans that they are happy. You know, because they really haven't been very happy the last few years. They have been so sad
long
and upset.
Long-suffering
fan base. And, and not only does it look like the Oilers, it looked like the Oilers were going to make the playoffs before deadline day.
Yeah.
Now they look like a more dangerous team as we get closer to April.
I'm with you. I really am. And having, you know, grown up in Western Canada, you know, I mean, Toronto is the mecca without question. Montreal also. But I'll tell you what, don't underestimate the import of the Flames and the Oilers in those markets. It's the lifeblood. It really is. So I think Edmontonians are walking the streets of Edmonton with a little bounce in their step today, especially after the way those guys played last night.
Well, we get the news today that Jake Muzzin is going to miss 4 weeks. He injured his hand in the game last night against Tampa after blocking a shot. Doesn't return for the third period. The Leafs hang on. They survived the Bolts in the third and hang on for a win. So a good 2 points, a big 2 points for Toronto. Yeah. But they lose Jake Muzzin. And he's such a huge piece of that team, especially on the back end and what he brings in terms of leadership and what it takes to win. He's one guy on that team that really knows. And now he's gone. And it's coming on the heels of a trade deadline where Kyle Dubas didn't do anything and then said he didn't know what the problem was. There's so much to unpack. But for me, this is why Kyle Dubas needed to make a move at the deadline. And just, you can never have too many defensemen. You just can't. And we saw so many defensemen move in the week leading up to deadline day. None of them went to Toronto. And it's just,
you know,
no big ones went to Toronto.
Two things on Muzzin and the Leafs' demise. You know, I'm with you. Muzzin, to me, was a great acquisition. He's a guy that comes from a winning culture in L.A. So he's been there. He knows what it takes. And he's quick to stand up and to articulate that in the room. But he goes out and he backs that up. You love that from this guy. So now you hate that that one guy is missing. And here's the ironic thing about it. He does it, playing the kind of hockey that we're all preaching.
Yeah.
We're all lamenting, why don't the Leafs play this
way?
He's out there
blocking.
He's out blocking a shot. He's out blocking a shot, and it's like, oh gosh.
The one guy that gets it, and now he's injured.
And now he's unavailable.
And
but maybe he ends up being a martyr at the end of the day, and it's like this, you know, it's this rallying cause or cry for the group. We'll see.
I don't know. It's
have my concerns about the Leafs, without question.
It's going to be an uphill battle, and you know, lucky for them, the Florida Panthers are sort of this team that is up and down as well. So Toronto certainly will still make the postseason, I think.
Yeah.
But losing Jake Muzzin is a huge blow. We're going to bring in ESPN's John Buccigross, as I mentioned off the top of the show. I believe we have him on the line. John, how you doing, friends?
Good, Jackie. How are you, Stu?
Hey, John. Hey, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here with two wicked smart people.
Wicked smart.
See, I like when John comes on the show because my confidence goes up a little bit. So because he's so kind.
He's like an Ovechkin. He's like a Kucherov. He brings up the level of the people around
him.
That's what Buchagras
does. He makes the players around him better.
That's what Buchagras does, and that's why we love having this guy on.
Hashtag GOAT.
Can't argue with any of that.
And humble too.
That didn't sound very humble. Nobody's going to accuse him of that.
Listen, we're just talking about the Leafs as we brought you on. Obviously, the news today that Jake Muzzin's going to be out for 4 weeks. He leaves the game last night. The Leafs hang on in the third period. A lot of people called it a character win. My reaction was, let's not pretend that was a good third period, because it wasn't. But what are your thoughts on sort of the status of the Leafs and everything that's transpired over the last week and a half with some of the embarrassing losses? Kyle Dubas saying on deadline day he's not really sure what's wrong, and now the loss of Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, it was a great, you know, I didn't see it as like a big character moment win for them. You know, they were kind of hanging on. It was kind of a midweek, not a huge, intense kind of game. Tampa tried to turn it on late and almost did it. But I didn't still see enough to think I'm convinced this team can win a playoff series against Tampa Bay, who they're likely going to play. I think they'll hold on to third, as you mentioned. I think they'll play Tampa in the first round, and I just don't see them winning 4 out of 7 or 6 or 5 or 4. So it was okay, but overall, it's like I'm with you. I didn't see enough there to be baptized.
Yeah, like the first half of that third period, I believe they were shot 10-0. It was 14-3,
it was really lopsided in the third.
But yeah. I tweeted, I'm not going to lie, like I tweeted out about it, that I was like, let's not pretend that was a good third period. And I got just, like Leafs Nation just lost it on me. So I deleted that tweet. I'm not ashamed to say that I deleted the tweet. I was like, I don't want to deal with this tonight. It's Tuesday. Like, I'm not.
So you never tweeted it. You tapped it out.
And no, I tweeted it.
Oh, you did.
I saw the backlash, and then I turtled.
So you walked.
I just completely was like, you know what? I'm not into this today. I can't handle it. I couldn't hang.
Hey, John. Know you're a big Boston fan. I want to pluck at your heartstrings here. One of the non-transactions at the deadline, and we've all had a chance to kind of see Joe Thornton's post-deadline presser. But as a Bruins fan, what would it have done for you for Joe to go back to the Bruins after all this time? I mean, a lot of us lamenting that Joe wants another crack at it, wanted to be part of a contending team here at the deadline. Don't know how long he's going to be around. But could you have envisioned a more of a dream story as a Bruin fan?
First of all, Sue, I love every team equally in the National Hockey League.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You're impartial.
I'm a national, international hockey journalist. Just remember that. And, it was interesting because certainly that would have been an easy trade. The Sharks would have let Thornton go for a conditional seventh-round pick. Hey, if the Bruins win the Cup, we'll make it a 5. You know, it wouldn't have been hard. But, you know, the Bruins, and you got a hand to them, when they've been making some of these deadline deals lately, they want a guy who's going to be there going forward. I think psychologically, players, organization, coaches don't look at Kasha like a rental. He'll be here next year. He can do lots of things. If Pastrnak strained his hamstring in game 2 of the playoffs, you could put him with Bergeron and with Marchand. He wouldn't look out of place. He could play the second line with Krejci. He could go on the third line with Coyle, who could give him some room. So he can do a lot of things. And, you know, they're kind of on that Bill Belichick mode of get a guy who can do a lot of things up and down. And, you know, obviously Thornton at this stage of his career probably pretty much can do one thing. And they don't want to limit themselves. You get an injury in a game, maybe 2, and then suddenly all the roles change midstream. And now depth becomes an issue, and that's how you win the playoffs, these depth matchups. The Bruins have a lot of it. And I guess sentimentally it just wasn't enough. But, yeah, it would have been really cool to see him come in and maybe finish his career in Boston, the former first overall pick, came under Pat Burns, a real difficult rookie year for him, and then to get traded. And it would have been really, really cool. It really, because I've been covering the NHL now for 30 years, and – you give me a top three list of guys that I've come across who are my favorite, Thornton is there.
Isn't he great? He's fabulous.
Oh, he's just so charming. He's so kind. He's goofy. He doesn't take air out of the room. He puts air into the room.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite kinds of players. Just a Hall of Fame guy. So, yeah, I was a little heartbroken hearing him talk the other day.
Yeah, it would have been a heck of a story. Even for him just to chase, you know, that elusive Stanley Cup with any contending team, it would have been. But with Boston, would have just made it even
all
that
the,
much more
all
special.
The sweeter.
I know this is so cliche, but this is just what we do with deadline day. Who was your biggest winner, John? Like, which team do you really think improved their team the most?
I really like what Tampa Bay did, adding Goudreau and Coleman. You watched that game last night. Blake Coleman is one of those maniac players who is on the edge of getting suspended with every hit. And those are the kind of guys you need. He's going to be... His intensity in the playoffs is going to be – that's my favorite part is that first week of the playoffs when the guy's intensity and focus goes up about 50% and they just become different people and different players. And he's one of those guys on the upper end in terms of guys who will really step up and just – you will notice him out there running around, hitting people, making plays. And Goudreau, again, just a little more sandpaper. And that team is good now. They turned it on in the third period last night. And you mentioned them when they started to outshoot Toronto in a big way. And Toronto hung on. I got a hand to them. They played a pretty good defensive game. They stayed in position and made it tough for Tampa Bay and held on for the win. But I really do like, I think, give them another month here. And I think you're going to see Goudreau and Coleman really fit in. And they're going to develop a personality they can take to the postseason.
John, just picking up on that, let's compare the Bolts, this iteration of the Bolts right now as constructed, and compare them to last year. Now, likelihood is they're probably not going to face kind of that buzzsaw type team that they saw in Columbus in the first round. But still, if we've learned anything in the process, you need to be a little heavier, you need to be a little grittier come the postseason as the NHL season carries out. Is Tampa, in your estimation, we talked about Coleman, we talked about Goudreau, let's insert into the mix too, Maroon was a summer signing this past summer. Are they in a better spot with that aspect in mind, in your estimation?
I think so. You know, obviously they had Palat, who's like that, and Killorn plays a good playoff game. I love Braden Point. Boy, the more I watch him, the more I realize what a good player he is, an amazing skater. He gets the puck. He's like a puck-retrieving centerman. Usually you see the winger be that guy, but he's kind of that guy. He's kind of an interesting hybrid player. I can see why they like him so much. He'll be a good playoff player. To me, it's Hedman. I look at that guy sometimes and say, man, if he would just pick it up a little bit, play a little nastier, play a little like your life depended on it, kind of a mentality.
Yeah,
just,
I'm with
it's
you.
It's frustrating to watch that sometimes. He's so big. He's such an amazing skater. I've always said big guys should play like little guys. That's what Chara does. Chara is 6'9", and he plays like he's 5'9", and he's going to be cut tomorrow. You know, he's made $100 million in this league, and he plays like he's going to get cut tomorrow, and he always has. He plays 5'9", not 6'9". And if Hedman would do that, my goodness, he would take them to a whole other level.
Yeah, they're going to be a fun team to watch when the postseason gets here just because of everything that happened last year. If they face adversity in the postseason, it's obviously going to be something we look back on last year and sort of wonder if they have what it takes to get over the adversity should they face it in this year's postseason. I'm going to flip my previous question on its head. Which team disappointed you at the deadline, if any?
Looking up and down, nothing. You know, maybe Colorado do they have enough goaltending? Do they feel like they're definitely ready to make that big move and possibly, you know, take a run for the cup? They should.
Yeah.
I think St. Louis is the favorite in the West. But overall, you know, it was a very aggressive trade period. Obviously, we saw the number of trades. It was way up. Teams were paying big prices to add players. So, you know, everyone got in the dance pretty good. And so for the most part, I think, you know, the playoffs are going to shape up to be really, really fun this year.
John, another installation of Rangers versus Islanders last night. Really big collision in this one. Trouba stands up Dal Cole just inside the, I think, Islanders blue line. I saw your tweet on this. I'm curious to hear you talk about it. You thought that was a major. I think you might have some of the ex-players around the business who disagree with you on that. Take us through it. Where's the major come in?
Well, I thought it could have been, and I mentioned that in college they would look at that, they would review it, and they would have given him five in a game, I think. The puck was sitting there. He could have played the puck. He disregarded the puck. And I'm more of a Neanderthal when it comes to hitting. I like the hitting. I think the players
are very articulate. Neanderthal, very articulate.
I think the players actually, what I call them, concussion flops a lot along the board. Well, they'll pretend they have a head injury to try to draw the big time penalty, and then they get up and finish the game. I think you see some of that when guys really grok. Now, obviously, there's obviously real concussions, but so I kind of like hitting. I want hitting. It's an important part of the game. I just thought, I mean, that one was such a head-on collision.
He smoked him.
And the puck was sitting right. And the thing is, Trouba was being a bully all night long. He's playing a great game.
We encourage that type of behavior at this level.
Yeah. And he was taking Barzal out of the game, and they had no – it was great for Pageot. They had to fight him. Last night was really fun.
You mentioned Pageot there. He makes his debut with the Islanders last night. Barry Trotz, after the game, had some interesting comments to the people that thought maybe the Islanders overpaid for Jean-Gabby Pageot, saying, listen, all the picks you want, some picks never play, so I'm fine with what we paid for him. What are your thoughts on what the Islanders paid for Pageot and his fit with their team?
Yeah, you just have to wait and see how the draft, plays out and who they got for that pick. But overall, he's a competent player, which is what they needed. Barzal is a really good number one centerman, but you need to add stuff behind him. I mentioned depth. You've got to be strong right down the line. You don't need superstars, but you need good players, as many good players as you can get. And I was really impressed with him last night. And I think he's a perfect fit for the Islanders. Then sign him long term. Again, not a rental. He just comes right with the team mentality. And obviously, he's a selfless guy to take on the big Trouba and put up a pretty good fight. And it was good. It was good. Little bear hug. Little body shots.
Yeah.
I love the hockey fight body shots. That's always fun to watch.
Hey, John, we're thrilled to have you on. We love your insight into our game. I want to give you, while we have you on, the opportunity to talk about an initiative I know is really important to you. You can play. I know you're on their advisory board. Talk about your work just in conjunction with eradicating homophobia in sports.
Well, I'll just start it back with Brendan Burke. When he decided to come out publicly, the son of Brian Burke, his brother Patrick, who I had corresponded with throughout the years, first when he was a student at Notre Dame, just got a hold. My email address used to be at the end of my column on ESPN.com, and people would contact me. And so I've been talking with people throughout. And so he wanted to come forward and give Brendan a big platform back in 2010. And so we wrote that, had a giant impact on the game. At the time, it was obviously got a lot of attention. And then obviously Brendan tragically dies in a car accident 3 months later. And Patrick wanted to carry that torch. Brendan was an absolute superstar. He would have been just a huge figure in hockey, and you can play, whatever he wanted to do. He was just a different kind of cat, just one of those humans who just lights up a room and just really cool. And so Patrick wanted me to, be a part of that. And certainly I'll do anything the Burke family wants me to, and I'm there to support them any way I can. And the issue has come a long way in the last decade. It's unbelievable. It's been a decade now. But, the way the NHL players and their attitudes towards so many things in life, but this one issue, they do it with such dignity and class. I get emotional when I think about these players and what they do for every issue, not just this one, but the way they handle it, such dignity and class and smarts. They really channel that great emotion. We who love hockey are emotional people. It's a sport for people who are emotional, who cry at commercials, who like to have a good time, who might have one too many beers sometimes. It all comes together. And we like emotional people and emotional things. And so that's our connection. That's why we get hooked on. It grabs us. It won't let go. And so I just love anything with the game, with the players. And certainly this was a very close thing with the family, that they entrusted me to write this story, to tell this story in the first place, and then obviously want to continue the legacy that was started by that simple hockey column.
Well, I too am very emotional, but kudos to you on that, because, you know, it's one thing to cover the game. It's another thing to impact it and help change it for the better. So a lot of respect for you for that. And speaking of being emotional, it was an emotional weekend for one Mr. David Ayers, the emergency backup for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but going in for the Carolina Hurricanes. Obviously, you've seen the story. Everyone has. It has transcended hockey. But it's also sparked a conversation about the emergency backup goaltender for teams and how maybe, you know, the rules surrounding that should change. What are your thoughts on the emergency backup?
Yeah, you know, I usually defer to players, former players like Stu or something like that. They would have a better feel for all of that than me, but it doesn't offend me. It doesn't bother me. It hardly ever happens. I suppose you could always have a third somewhat, semi-professional goaltender in the stands. It wouldn't be that expensive to give the guy a ticket, maybe give him a tentative contract for $500 if he gets in, he gets this, whatever you want to come up with, put the CBA. It wouldn't be that expensive. It wouldn't be a big deal. But that being said, I think it's so cool what happened. It's such a connection to the beer league guy who gets up at 10 o'clock, goes to his local rink and plays adult hockey at 10. He looks at this guy and thinks, geez, maybe there's a chance that could happen someday.
Yeah.
It's almost, you know, it's just such a long season. It couldn't happen at a better time. The dog days of the season are February. We can't wait for March to get here. We want better weather. We want spring. We want games that matter. And from, you know, youth hockey to college to high school, March is the month where it really starts to happen and amp up. And so to happen here in February, so cool. It's such a neat story. I like it. But certainly, again, I defer to people who think maybe it should be professionalized more. That shouldn't happen. But, again, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and as we think it through, too, John, I mean, this only happens in the context of an 82-game regular season, and it rarely happens.
It's so rare.
Kind of gets buffered out, even if it does happen for one team over the course of 82 games. You'll never see it happen in the playoffs, because by the time the playoffs roll around, every organization who's still part of the mix then has probably called up at least a third goaltender, potentially a fourth goaltender, and the likelihood is just very, very far removed that point of year. You know, we've been following another really interesting story, perhaps one of the brightest in our game today. Ovi just is able to score his 700th, and no sooner does he get rewarded and offered a watch from the Washington Capitals organization. He straps on the watch, walks out, and scores his 701st. He's right back to business. I know you've done some hypothesizing about Ovi's prospects for overtaking the great one. Spell that out for us.
Yeah, I actually first wrote the column back in 2010, 10 years ago, when he was 24 years old. He'd gotten off to such a hot start, and I could tell this cat was different. I wrote it in early 2010. I projected his career to the age of 40. If he could break Wayne Gretzky's record. And as I went through it, I kind of went one year at a time, and I kind of looked at historical similarities. You know, what was Brett Hall's best year? He was 37 years old. And I said, okay, Ovi should be around that number. And what about Brendan Shanahan and Phil Esposito when he was 35? How can we kind of project Ovi's mark? And by the time I got to 40 years old, I added up all the numbers, and I had him way over Wayne Gretzky's record. And so I went back and kind of, you know, changed a few numbers here or there, and I came up with that, you know, with a reasonable assumption that he's a very good chance to do it. This was 10 years ago. I wasn't going to say he was definitely going to do it, but a very good chance. Now that we're here at 701, I would be shocked if he didn't. I think it's more likely he scores 1,000 goals than he doesn't break Gretzky's record. He'll pass Gartner this season. He'll pass Esposito and Dion and Hall next season. Then he'll pass Jagr. Then he'll pass Gordie Howe in 22-23. And then he'll break Wayne Gretzky's record on January 15th, 2026, at the age of 40 on ESPN's Wednesday Night Hockey.
I love it. So detailed.
Wouldn't that be something? Are you a little bit surprised? Even, I mean, your projections sound like they may have had this baked into the recipe, but are you a little bit surprised by not only his productivity, but his endurability over the really 10 years since you drafted that prediction?
Absolutely. And let's face it, he's like LeBron James and even more durable, where he just doesn't get hurt. He's got great genetics. He's got great genetics. His mom was a gold medal basketball player. His dad was a soccer player. You know, he's got an ass as big as a microwave. I mean, you know, he's just absolute locomotive. You see him kick around the soccer ball under the tunnel before the game. It's like, what is this guy? He's like an NFL guard. He's just so sturdy. And slap shots, as you know, Stu, they don't age. He'll be able to shoot a slap shot till he's 50. And yeah. As I mentioned, Brett Hall in his late 30s has had a gigantic year because he stands in one spot and just claps it. Now, he obviously can still score. He's big. He'll get closer to the net. And you're starting to see that now. He's starting to get kind of those garbage goals around the net a little bit now. But the slap shot will not go anywhere. He won't lose that in the next 6 years. And he's playing with good players. He's got a young Kuznetsov. He's still got Backstrom. We'll have 3-4 years. So part of finishing off records or finishing off these kinds of personal stats or having good teammates. It's like Patrice Bergeron has had I had him as a marginal Hall of Famer. Now playing with Pasternak and Marchand has him a lock Hall of Famer. When you get to play with great teammates, it just gives you a little bit of push. And Ovechkin having Kuznetsov, Backstrom, that's going to help him push and get that record as long as there's no catastrophic injury here in the next 5 years. All he needs to do is average 30 goals a year till he's 40. I mean, that shouldn't be a problem, and he might average 40 because right now he's averaging 50. So all he's got to do is average 31 goals a year after this year and play till he's 40.
I'll tell you what, I have never heard a derriere compared to a microwave, but I'm definitely going to use that moving forward.
There's some good-sized microwaves out there. Just think about it. Like the one at my house, if you're making that comparison to the one at my house, that's a big backside.
All right.
That's a big backside.
Well, I know one thing. If Ovi does one day break the great one's record, I hope that I am still fortunate enough to be covering this game, because that is going to be so fun to watch as a fan, but to cover as a broadcaster would just be incredible. Speaking of which, John, I'm going to ask you a question that's really selfish of me because it just pertains to some of my own personal interests, but I'm curious, we're coming off a 13-game night last night in the NHL. I'm curious how you watch the games that night when it's a busy night in the NHL. How do you track all the games? What is your system in terms of watching hockey and making sure you're up to date on everything going on for the next day?
Well, certainly, you know, I watched two games last night on ESPN Plus. They had a couple of games on. They had the Tampa game. They had the Ranger game. So that's fun going back and forth in that. I'm on Twitter seeing how unimpressed you were with that third period of the Maple Leafs. I saw that tweet. So certainly Twitter is just a great avenue for hockey because it's so emotional, and hockey fans are so emotional. And so it's really a great companion. And obviously going to the NHL app, which is a great app. And sometimes there's, the Bruins and Flames game was a free game on there, so I could watch that on my phone while I watch the Rangers and Islanders. There's so much. People always complain about sometimes like ESPN not showing enough hockey. This is the best time ever to be a hockey fan. There's content everywhere. The Athletic, the NHL Network, SiriusXM, NHL Radio. I mean, it's everywhere. It's on our phone. It's on our TV. So it's just, it's not hard. But basically, just hunker down, watch the games on TV, then one on my phone, and then I follow Twitter, look at the standings, look at schedules. So, that's usually how I attack the day.
How you operate.
John, before Jackie and I had you on, we were talking a little bit about another team who made a bit of a splash at the deadline, the Edmonton Oilers. I think Edmontonians are walking the streets with a little bounce in their stride these days. But Kenny Holland, new general manager, appears to have established a bit of a pipeline with his old team, bringing in Green and then right at the deadline, Athanasiou, who had a great game last night. How do you feel about the Oil going forward?
Yeah, they're an interesting team. They're not deep enough organizationally and probably not close enough to go for it. So they didn't want to trade their first-round pick, or they could have, they could have done even better. Athanasiou was the perfect kind of guy to kind of throw out there with tons of speed. He's cheap, not the quite all-around player maybe going forward you're always going to be comfortable with. He just wants to get his cookies, get him a couple goals. He's happy. But if you can do that with him and get a little more threat and didn't have to give up, a first-round pick, because, again, they got to build that organization. They don't have enough depth. and they can't be trading away first-round picks yet. And, you know, they're looking forward to slowly build this thing, you know, maybe be a threat next year. Of course, just get in the tournament. You never know what can happen when you have a guy like Draisaitl and McDavid and get a hot goalie. But they're really looking forward to next year or the year after, probably to peak and to really become a major player going forward, hopefully like a 5 to 6 year window as McDavid hits his late 20s. So they have to, he has to be a little careful. He wants to go for it. He wants to supplement McDavid, such a high character guy and player, but he has to be a little careful not to give away high picks. I got to get more depth.
Yeah, got to play it smart. I know one thing, though. Draisaitl and McDavid in the postseason is good for business, as are you, John Buccigross. We appreciate you coming on the show and letting us sort of chat your ear off here on the Puck Culture podcast. But like you said, March is right around the corner. Best time of the year. We're going to have the final stretch of the season, the playoff races, and then, of course, the postseason. And we hope to chat with you again down the road. Thank you for the time. You are the best.
And don't forget college hockey, Frozen Four in Detroit this year.
Absolutely,
this
absolutely.
Doing the play-by-play with Melrose, my eighth year, Little Caesars in April. So we're looking forward to doing that. And then the playoffs start. So, yeah, it's my favorite time of year, March
awesome.
And April.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Peace.
ESPN's John Buccigross, always a pleasure. And the type of guest, really, like, you could throw anything at that guy, and he is going to have an answer for you. So it's always good to have someone like that on, and he really is. Still, after covering the game for so many years, still you can just hear it from him. Such a passionate fan of the game of hockey. So I love talking to him and getting
great.
His thoughts on
you
things.
You know what amazes me is when you hear a guy like that talk, you get a chance to kind of you get a sense of what's going on inside his mind and how clear he is, how well he knows our sports. But Jackie, he follows all the other sports.
I know, it's crazy.
He's got the other sports wired in the same way. Although, I do get a sense of his passion. I think hockey's his first love. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and what I love about him too is when you ask him something, if he doesn't necessarily have a strong opinion or he thinks, like I love that when we were talking about David Ayers and the emergency backup situation, he kind of deferred to you and was like, well, I think it's more something that like former players might have a better. I think, you know, when you've covered the game as long as someone is John Buccigross and have sort of his status in the industry, I think I always respect when someone says, yeah, well, this is how I feel about it, but I kind of think it's more of a topic for former players. So I respected that, but the David Ayers situation, I mean, I don't know how anyone could hate that story.
Yeah, it was
awesome.
Such an amazing story. I tell you, I think my favorite moment, I mean, it's a great story all by itself. We appreciate how that all unfolds in the context of a Carolina/Toronto game, but then the aftermath.
Yeah.
I mean, we said this in off air in our pre-production meeting today, if the one thing the Carolina Hurricanes get these days, it's when a good story involves
PR.
Them, and they jump all over it. They had this guy everywhere across North America in the days, the hours right after. I think one of my favorite moments is David Ayers shows up on the Stephen Colbert show. And the best part was, you saw it, of course. You saw the opening monologue from Colbert. It's he fakes the hamstring pull, and then they bring in the backup, the emergency backup. Host for the Colbert Show. I thought that was absolutely fabulous. The thing I enjoyed most about it was you can see it coming from the time that Colbert fakes the hamstring pull. You know that it's coming, but they just pulled it off so well. Everybody bought into it. And I was just left laughing and feeling just a really cool moment in TV. I thought it was fabulous.
Yeah, a whirlwind few days for David Ayers, to say the very least, making all the rounds. I mean, he was on the Today Show, which was super emotional.
I think the guy forgot to eat while he was doing the tour.
Well, you know, busy guy. I'm sure he did. He barely had time to breathe, I'm sure. But for me, too, I mean, making the media rounds and doing all the TV shows is one thing. He was in New York City yesterday. But for me, what I love, and it goes back to sort of the PR team and David Ayers sort of making the most out of a situation, and that is making the T-shirts with Ayers' name on them and selling them to fans, but then taking the proceeds from that and donating them to a good cause. David Ayers had a kidney transplant, so sort of giving back to people that might be going through a similar experience, I thought was really well played. And for me, that kind of is the big takeaway from the story, is that, you know, someone gets this 15 minutes of fame or 30 minutes or however long it's going to be.
That's a really
and
cool
he
thing.
Says, you know what, I don't want the money from those shirts or whatever you know, percentage he would have gotten.
Yeah.
To have his name on those shirts being sold to Canes fans, to say, you know, let's donate the money, I think says a lot about the man, David Ayers.
Yeah.
So that, you know, for me was the big thing.
And the really emotional piece, and credit the Canes, because you never know this stuff until you actually dive into a story like this. But his mother is his kidney donor.
Yeah.
And he shows up on the Today Show. He doesn't know his mom. They put it together in such a way that he doesn't know his mom's going to be on the show. They piped her in via FaceTime or some video feed. And he loses it. He loses it on camera. And you get such a sense of how close the connection is there. And of course, by now, you've kind of appreciated the history that his mom was his donor at some point in his past. And I'll tell you what, I about buckled over that. I really did.
Emotional.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah,
it was a cool
very
moment.
Very emotional. So probably the best story of 2020 so far in terms of emotion and a fan of the game getting to live out a dream and then become a little bit of a celebrity in his own right. Running out of time, a couple more things I wanted to get to surrounding the trade deadline, a couple teams we haven't talked about. And one of the more intriguing things that really got people talking and excited was the idea that Zach Parise was almost dealt out of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Doesn't end up happening, but it was going to be a deal with the Islanders. It falls through. Your thoughts on that, and sort of really the kind of question that came up in our meeting this morning was, Zach Parise waives his no trade clause, doesn't get traded, now has to go back into that room where he is a core piece of that team. And would there be any blowback for something like that, knowing that a guy was willing or wanted to leave?
I think that's the thing that a lot of lay people, folks outside the culture, really don't appreciate. Because, there was an outward declaration, a very bold one. Parise wanted an opportunity to pursue things elsewhere. It's no longer the fit everybody thought it would be in Minnesota. And yet you've got this onerous, high-end, long-term contract with a no-move clause that has been tying him to this team in this market for the longest time. So it looked like there may be a break and he was headed in a different direction. To your point, and I think it's an interesting one for folks that haven't been around the game much, business is business at the end of the day inside an NHL locker room. And when Zach Parise walks back in post-deadline into that Minnesota Wild locker room, he remains part of the group. They understand, each and every player in that room, in spite of the fact that he took a position that may have had him going in a different direction, he is still a member of the Wild going forward, and they're going to look to him for the leadership and the contribution that he's able to bring. But they respect, this is his business to manage.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of have to separate that from what's going on just in terms of the wins and losses on the ice for this reason. Because today it's Zach Parise, next week, next month, next summer, it might be Matt Dumba, or it might be Devan Dubnyk, or it might be somebody else, but it's going to be your business. You're going to have to take a position like that to get to a place where you want to be in your career. So let's have this mutual respect within the locker room. That's kind of the way it operates in our culture.
All right. Well, I like that you used the word culture there. This is, after kinda all, ties the puck in, culture
kinda
podcast.
Kind of ties in with something else we got going on.
Yeah, I think players, you know, they for the most part understand. I wonder, you know, because he's in Minnesota, how the fan base would feel about it.
Now, the fan base is a different story.
Well, yeah, but Minnesota, they seem pretty well-tempered.
And that's a very...
You know what I mean?
It's a sophisticated hockey market as well.
Yeah.
So I think they get it, and perhaps at the end of the day, you know... potentially this deal doesn't happen with New York, with the Islanders. That was the, you know, projected acquiring party or acquiring team. Maybe it doesn't happen there. Maybe it does. But it's at least opened up a window whereby, gosh, maybe the Wild could get out from under this contract. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could bring in some other pieces. And this is an important kind of building block or transition to a better place for the Wild. So at the end of the day, if the fans can kind of take that perspective, I think everybody just kind of pushes beyond. And I tell you what, a lot of folks aren't counting the Wild out of the postseason picture at this point. The West is kind of crazy, girl.
Well, you know who I'm not counting out of the Stanley Cup picture? The Pittsburgh Penguins have been playing very consistently,
Jimmy
despite
Rutherford.
All of the injuries. And Rutherford lives up to his reputation at deadline day two, right?
Yeah.
Making some moves. They get Patty Marleau. They get Jason Zucker ahead of the deadline and a couple of other moves as well. Your thoughts on Pittsburgh moving forward?
Well, I really like what they've done. I thought Zucker was a great transaction. And what I liked most about that was they're bringing in somebody who is a great fit for Sidney. And we saw that right from the outset. He was on the board in his first game as a member of Sidney's line. He's been a great fit on that first unit on the power play. Zucker's a very talented player. Great Jets. He'll keep up to Sid, and he appears to read off him really well. So you like that transaction. I suppose if I had any concerns about what Pittsburgh is doing, I like that Jim Rutherford is trying to bolster, provide a little depth where his group is concerned up front. But there's this balance you walk as a team, and a manager has to keep this in mind. You know, if you're replacing and introducing two new parts, three new parts into the mix, that's okay. You start to get into four new parts where a core of 12 forwards are concerned, that's pretty disruptive. We've seen teams have that backfire on them in the past. It happened in Nashville, kind of pre-cup run. I think Poyle kind of pushing too hard to introduce too many pieces into the mix. So you kind of have to walk that balance. But Jimmy Rutherford's got a good feel for all that. I suspect the hockey that we've seen the Pens playing and the hockey we'll see the Pens play as these new parts assimilate, I'm with you. That's a team to watch.
I just want to see Penn's caps again in the postseason. Oh, seven-game series.
So
give me it. All day, every day, I will
so
watch
much.
That series.
Probably one of the most
so
entertaining.
Fun.
Really, almost anything in the Metro.
The tougher path to the final, it seems at this point, is going to be the East. Like, whatever team comes out of the East, it's going to be a more difficult path.
Oh, I think tougher teams to go through, without question.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good, that's a good point by you. I think there are, you know, you could stack up some really solid teams that I just don't think the West has this going on. Start with Tampa and the way they've resurrected their season. Washington is really strong. Boston added some nice pieces. Boston, of all the teams across the NHL, in that upper tier have probably been the most consistent. They only suffered their third regulation loss at home last night. So there are some really top end teams in the East. St. Louis in the West and
Dallas,
Colorado if healthy.
I like Dallas.
And I like Dallas too. They've been a real steady comer all year. My only concern about Dallas is
scoring.
Yeah, I just don't know. They're really comfortable playing in tight games. Give them a lot of credit. This is their identity. But gosh, if they were another half goal a game better, just in terms of the offense they produce, I'd feel better about Dallas. But given the way the West is kind of presently constructed, I like Dallas or St. Louis to come out of the West.
All right. Time will tell.
Sure thing.
But we are finally in the home stretch of the season. 20-ish. Games left for most teams. You have to be careful with that because, like, it's never the same for all the teams.
No
but
question.
20-ish games left. It's officially the home stretch of the season. So things are about to get real in the National Hockey League, and I would have it no other way. It's been fun.
It's been great.
Do you have a sleeper team?
Sleeper team. I think probably I would put Colorado or Dallas in that sleeper team.
You think they're a sleeper team?
Yeah, but under normal circumstances, yes. There's only one elite-level team to compare them to. It's St. Louis, in my estimation.
See, a sleeper to me would be like a Vancouver.
Yeah.
Although, we got to see with them because their goaltenders, their number one guy is injured right now, so they're in tough. They could be a sleeper to me or like an Edmonton, even though they're in the mix in the Pacific.
Okay.
Like, they're going to make the playoffs, but like, what are they going to do in the playoffs? I don't know.
All right, I'll go deeper then. Calgary,
okay.
Did you see the game Calgary played in Boston, speaking of their third loss at home, to hand them their third loss at home last night? I'll tell you what, if Calgary, and if they've been able to do it really consistently over the last, 20-so games on the road, but if they can replicate that at home, Calgary's got something to be aware of postseason.
All right, we shall see. It's been a slice. We have another show meeting to get to, so we got to run.
It's a lot of hockey today,
girl.
Those
of you listening in podcast form, thank you for listening. For those of you watching on YouTube, thank you for watching. We had a blast. Send us your comments, questions, concerns using the hashtag PuckCulture, and we will see you next week. Peace.
Thanks for joining the culture.
Peace.
Thanks for joining the culture.